Okay, I think we're ready to get started.
Okay, we're on.
All right, thanks, Matt. Good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-192 and PU-20-220. NSP Deferred Accounting for Electric and Gas Related to COVID-19 Expenses. It is 2:30 p.m. on Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchak? Okay.
Commissioner Fedorchak, I think you were speaking and maybe on mute.
I heard no opening comments. Up, you're still muted.
Do you have the mute
there
on your phone, Commissioner?
Sorry, I'm muted on my phone. I've been using my screen and then I went fancy and muted my phone. So anyway, no opening comments, just what I said previously, which is we'll just apply to this one as well. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Commissioner Christman?
Yeah, nothing further. Thanks to NSP representatives for being here to provide information.
It's kind of scary how good I am at starting to be able to read what, you know, read lips. So at least I think I can. So, and it's always good, right? Okay, this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. I think I hear an airplane. Okay, so if everyone could mute their speaker when they're not live, that would be helpful. The applicant, again, goes first in this type of proceeding. But before starting, I'll quickly introduce our staff. We have Victor Shook and Brian Johnson from staff engaged in the meeting. And then from Northern States Power, Mr. Cedarquist, do you want to introduce?
Sure. Dave Cedarquist, North Dakota Regulatory Affairs with Xcel Energy. And we also have in the meeting Ryan Long, Managing Attorney for Xcel Energy, and Karen Everson, Director of Utility Accounting. And I should just say right up front, perhaps an oversight on my part, I did not invite a team member from our customer care group. If there are some very in-depth questions about customer reactions or maybe some very specific policies, we might have to follow up with you at a later point in time. So I just wanted to get that out there right up front.
Okay.
So thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity. As you might expect, our comments will be very similar with those already presented by MBU and soon to be delivered by Otter Tail. I'd like to thank the MBU crew for providing much of the common background information to this request. I'm not going to repeat any of it, and that's why Victor gives us 45 minutes instead of an hour, I suppose. But much of the information is common to our points, too. But I would like to just take a couple of minutes to underscore some of the key points of the petition from our perspective. And I'll start by saying that with this application, we are strictly asking for the commission's approval to do really fundamentally three things. One is to establish the accounting to be able to track the financial impacts of COVID from March 13th. And secondly, to defer the incremental costs and lost revenues. And then thirdly, record those amounts as regulatory assets. And I believe it was mentioned earlier that March 13th is the date that Governor Burgum issued Executive Order 2020-03 declaring a state of emergency in North Dakota. So that is our starting point. We are not seeking rate recovery with the petition before you. In fact, because of the changing nature of this pandemic, we don't really know yet what its full impact will be, nor can we really say with much certainty when or even if Xcel Energy may file for future rate relief or even to what extent. So if such a filing is made, as you know, the commission and any interested parties will at that time be able to fully evaluate the recoverability of our proposed impact. So, as you know, COVID-19's created really unforeseen and unprecedented circumstances worldwide. North Dakota, not an exception. Xcel Energy has responded in ways very similar, I'm sure, to MDU and Otter Tail. We have revised or implemented a number of new operational processes to help ensure the safety of the public and our employees, to help maintain the reliability of our electric and our natural gas system, and to provide some relief for those customers who are having difficulty during this time paying their energy bills. In all of our actions, we have been compliant with state and federal directives and guidelines. So why do we feel deferred accounting is appropriate for these impacts? As we've not faced anything like this before, we believe that COVID-19 is certainly an unusual event. It's a non-recurring event, or at most, a highly infrequent event. And it may ultimately have a material economic impact on the company, and other commissions have seen fit to approve deferred accounting. So it's for really all of those reasons that we believe deferred accounting is warranted here in North Dakota as well. So really those are all the comments I wanted to make at this point in time, and our team is available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Do you have an exhibit in terms of what your collections look like, how they compare 2020 versus 2019?
Yeah, we don't have any. I don't have any PowerPoint slides or schedules showing that. We do have some information that we can provide you verbally. So ask away.
Would it look similar to, you know, generally speaking, to what MDU is experiencing?
Yeah, we have some information here around our bad debt expense that I'll speak to first. If we look at the year-to-date estimate for bad debt for North Dakota, and we compare it to a prior three-year average, 2017 through 2019, we are seeing an increase year-to-date in bad debt of over 40%, about 44%. So that's maybe even a little higher than what MDU had shown for their arrears. But
what percentage would you, if you have a percentage, when someone is disconnected, service is disconnected, what's the overall percentage on, I would imagine a high percentage, figure out a way to get caught up, get on a payment plan of some sort, or hopefully that's, you know, worked out or attempted to be worked out beforehand. But once someone gets to the point of they're truly disconnected, is that just a lost customer because they're going to move somewhere else and they've vacated at that point in time anyway?
No, I wouldn't say that, Commissioner. I wouldn't say it's a, you know, it's a lost cause by any stretch. I know that we make many efforts to work with the customer on payment arrangements primarily, and we're being especially proactive during this COVID situation to call potentially troubled, you know, troubled spots in terms of late payments. So, no, it's not a lost cause. We're working hard. I don't have percentages of how successful we are with customers that have been disconnected, but we're to work with them.
Okay, so the majority that of disconnects eventually do come back?
I can't answer that. I can't say majority. I'm not sure. Perhaps that's something I can follow with an answer for after this.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a handle on how big of a risk does that last bucket, so to speak, when people fall into a disconnect and they owe X amount, you know, in terms of recovery, is it 50% is ultimately recovered because they come back, or what that might look like?
Yeah, I will say that now as we have restarted sending disconnect notices out, and that started a week ago, in early August, we'll start actually disconnecting. But between now and then, we're starting with the worst-case scenarios. Obviously, accounts over $1,000, and we're going to work with them first, but we have a little bit more of a different plan under the COVID scenario now as we restart the process of disconnections. It's a little more deliberate, a little more intentional.
How does the North Dakota market compare to the Minnesota market in terms of ratepayer reaction?
You know what? During the MDU presentation, I did inquire a little bit about whether we're getting some reactions from customers, anecdotally. And the answer I got from my source is that we haven't really heard much. It's been fairly quiet in terms of how customers are reacting. I suppose part of that's because we just started again. I'm not sure I can make a comparison between Minnesota and North Dakota customers terms of that breakdown. I'd have to do a little research to see if there is an actual statistical difference in that. So,
yeah, and the biggest reason I ask is to make sure there isn't a misconception about maybe something people have heard from, on the federal side, well, you just can't disconnect, or somehow believing that someone else will ultimately pay the bill. And it doesn't sound like that's the case with either MDU nor yourself. But I just wanted to make sure that on the communication side of the equation, that we didn't have work to do or should do. So if you get a sense of that at any point in time, it'd be very helpful to know.
All right.
I don't have any other immediate questions, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Say, Dave and Ryan, the question that comes to mind to me is how will you determine what's COVID-related, what is a COVID-related cost, and what isn't?
I can start, Ryan, maybe with a response.
Sure.
In some cases, we are looking at previous history for a certain expense and looking at variations from history or budgets. We might be looking at budgets. In the case of revenues and sales, we're probably going to take a look at some kind of a baseline year, whether it's some kind of test year or a test budget. And we're going to weather normalize and compare the difference between normal results and what we have forecasted. So, and we fully intend, if and when we do file any kind of recoverability filing down the road, to work with staff in trying to determine if we've taken a reasonable attempt at isolating. It's not a perfect science, obviously, but we'll take some reasonable steps to try to isolate the COVID impact. Ryan, did you have anything to
add? I don't have a lot to add to that. I think there's a qualitative piece to it and a quantitative piece to it. I think Dave, talking about sales, you have to look at kind of a representative year and look how this year is different from that year on the quantitative side. On the qualitative side, I think there is just certain categories of spend that we know have been driven by our, need to work from home, our need to isolate plant employees, our need to purchase additional software licenses so that we can have video conferencing and those kinds of things. And so there was tracking set up by our accounting team at the beginning of the pandemic to isolate those categories of expenses for PPE, things along those lines. And they've been tracking those on a qualitative basis because under the, decision that all of those costs are related to COVID. But then I think there are these other impacts that require a little bit more analysis and are slightly less perfect.
Ryan,
thank you. Go ahead. You have more to add.
This is Karen Everson. I'm the director of utility accounting at Excel. I would just add that, Ryan's absolutely correct. We did set up some internal orders that track our costs that the business area charges are incurring that are related to COVID. We have a team that reviews those charges, you know, ask questions about them. And if something, you know, doesn't, we don't feel it's justified enough that it's directly related to COVID, we'll write it off to their regular O&M expense. And so I do feel there's a pretty good review process currently going on at Excel to identify the incremental costs.
Okay, great. And are there any surprise categories that you maybe wouldn't have expected, like the ones that you just listed off? Or are there any areas where you're seeing things that you thought, huh, here's something unusual?
Do you want to respond to that, Karen?
I don't think that there's anything that I'm surprised by. I guess, Dave, I don't know what your answer to that question would be. I think, you know, I think if you think about it, I think our costs that we're seeing, you know, I think they're directly tied to the pandemic and they kind of make sense.
What about savings? Are you tracking those too, or will those show up someplace else where, you know, certainly less travel and you know, a lot less conference travel and that sort of thing. Will those be tracked as well?
We are tracking savings as well, Commissioner. And yes, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. Travel, certain employee expenses related to travel in particular are savings that we are currently tracking.
And so would that be visible then in this reporting regime, the deferred accounting, the offsets and the savings?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And that's just something that would happen routinely, or
yeah,
we'd have to set that up in advance, that that's the expectation?
I think. Go ahead, Karen.
This is Karen. I would just add, you know, it's always easier to track costs that when you actually have costs as opposed to costs that don't exist. And so, you know, right now we have an estimate of the total costs that, you know, we estimate that we have not incurred related to the pandemic. And you know, I think further definition and exploration needs to be done on that. So, you know, to the extent that we do have cost savings, I would anticipate we would reduce any of our deferred costs by these anticipated cost savings.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
It does. But you say anticipated. Do you mean, what do you mean by anticipated? Because they would have either been realized or not if the expenses had already been realized, right? Over the same
correct
time period.
Yeah. Yeah, that was maybe a poor choice of words.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was understanding. I don't speak accounting very well.
We're tracking the savings, Commissioner, that can be tied pretty directly to COVID, or that would sort of fall out as a natural consequence of COVID, or some of the directives and limitations that have been ordered by government.
Okay. And are there unusual ones that might not be as obvious, like, if the facilities aren't requiring as much maintenance because the demand is down? Things such as that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very real situation. But on the other hand, we see offsets by the increased cleaning that's occurring there. Increased cleaning agents and things that are now on the walls, and just sort of, you know, equipping the facility now to be safer. So we're seeing some costs there.
Okay. Let me look here. Did you guys do an additional borrowing line to, like MDU mentioned?
I'm going to let maybe Ryan take a shot at that one from a financing standpoint.
You know, I know that we have in some of our jurisdictions secured additional both short and long-term debt. part of that was driven by attractive capital markets. And there were certain times that it made a lot of sense to go out to the market. But I think that it was also driven in part by the company's interest in, you know, securing financial security at a time when there was a lot of volatility in the market. I don't specifically have at my fingertips any amount of debt issuance or lines that NSPM has secured since the beginning of COVID, but we can certainly follow up on that.
Okay. And then also, do you have a total amount or estimate of the arrears for your residential customers in North Dakota?
A dollar amount or?
Yeah, a dollar amount.
We don't have the North Dakota dollar amounts right now. I have company-wide dollar amounts for arrears. And again, those are showing increases year to date from what historically would be around $50 million year to date to up in the $72 million range this year or so. But we are pulling the North Dakota numbers together. It involved a little bit more work, so we didn't have it for this meeting.
Okay. And are there differences, significant differences between the electric and gas in terms of impacts or arrears or anything like that?
I would say that in terms of the impact on sales, we have not seen really much of an impact on industrial gas sales, commercial and industrial, whereas on the electric side, the second quarter took quite a hit on C&I electric. So I don't know if that's related to just the low price of gas and the fact that this is a shoulder month period, not a lot of heating going on anyway, perhaps, but that's one distinction that comes to mind for me. Ryan or Karen, any comments to add as far as gas and electric differences?
I can say that we've certainly seen more arrears on the electric side than the gas side of the business. And I think that's mostly driven by the period of time that we've been living in.
Yeah. Might have been different in the winter, harder
exactly.
Winter.
Exactly.
Okay. I think so. That's it for now, Mr. Chairman, for my question.
Okay. Ryan, you brought up an interesting or made an interesting comment related to one of the questions, and that is, can you just generally speaking, you went back to the capital markets in some instances and were able to obtain more attractive rates, or was it just more for a level of comfort due to the volatility or both?
Mr. Chairman, I think it was both to a certain extent. I mean, I think that we were able to. I am thinking, to be just very transparent, I'm thinking about our Colorado jurisdiction. I know that Fiesco, our public service of Colorado, secured several hundred millions of dollars of short-term debt because they were able to secure it at a pretty much a historically low coupon rate, and that was a very financially advantageous thing for the company to do for, you know, for customers at that point in time. But I think that being able to do that amidst the volatility that we've seen in the capital markets was also a financially prudent thing for the company to have done. And so I think that had something to do with it as well.
Okay. So to some extent, North Dakota, Minnesota markets might see a small benefit that way as well?
It's possible when you look at debt rates in the future that you will see some change relative to historical. It's not terribly material, but we have seen at certain periods of time in the past few months lower coupon rates than we've otherwise seen.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Chrisman, did you have any questions?
I do, and I lost audio for a little while. It looked like most of the time when I couldn't hear anything. Ryan was talking, but I can get that from the case file. I just pointed out, I'm sorry if I asked something over here. You talked about restart, or Dave talked very early on about restarting disconnects. I assume that any penalty waivers that were going on, that's also been suspended, and penalties for late payments are renewed again?
There was a little bit of difference in terms of late payment fees. In North Dakota, we did keep applying late payment fees to accounts all the way through May. We stopped in June because of COVID and the fact that we didn't have personnel in our remittance area downtown. We actually felt that it was appropriate to suspend the application of late payment fees beginning in June. I believe that has now, they are now being reapplied. So it wasn't the situation where late payment fees were suspended right away during the COVID period.
Okay. And you mentioned about a 40% higher bad debt rate for year to date so far for residential. Are your non-residential accounts also running about 40% ahead, or is that significantly different?
I think maybe Karen can help me with this. I actually think those bad debt numbers are for all customers, not just residential. Can you confirm, Karen? She was having some difficulty with her phone earlier. Maybe it's not connected. Oh, there she is.
I missed that, though. I was not here, thank you, for a while. Could you repeat the question?
Oh, sure. Yes, Karen. The Dave cited early on that bad debts are about 40% from previous years, year to date. I was thinking that was residential, but now I see in my notes I didn't write residential. Is that residential and non-residential, or just one?
It's total, so it's both.
Somewhere along the line, when you get your numbers closer to finalized, I'd like to know the comparison between the residential and the non-residential.
Okay.
And then
that's really possible. We can get that.
My last question, I think, is this. I know at least some of you were listening during MDU's presentation, and they talked about working with some of the customers that are in arrears on a longer-term payment plan where they get 12 months was what they threw out as opposed to the typical 2 months. Are you working with customers on something similar to that? Or tell me what you're doing to help people get caught back up.
Yes, and that's a question I would like to be able to follow up, Commissioner, with.
I can actually answer that. I can answer that one.
Great, thanks,
we've extended payment plans to up to 12 months, Commissioner Kristen.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Victor, do you have any questions?
Couple things similar to the MDU cases. So I had a data request set for each of the two for gas and electric. I don't believe there was any trade secret information in either of those, so I don't think we have that concern. If I'm wrong, Dave or Ryan, please correct me, and we'll get that fixed up. But I'd just like to have those added into the record. Again, similar to MDU, I think it's important that we're tracking all of the pieces of this. And I think you've already kind of started talking about that, you know, both the increase and decrease to expenses. And since you are talking about a request for loss in revenue, I think the increased revenue in some other areas should be tracked as well. So I just want to clarify that we should we need to track all of the pieces of this so that in the future, and I think that's where this is a relatively simple proceeding, but in the future proceeding where you're actually requesting recovery and we're talking about specific expenditure types and amounts, that's where the real fun is going to begin. So to have all of the relevant information collected is going to be important.
Okay.
So that's all for me. Thank you.
Okay. And then you mentioned, did you mention the aging report and the two documents, data requests?
Just two data requests that I had received the responses back from. I don't believe we've put those in the docket yet, so I'd just like to have those included with the case docket. There's nothing of particular concern to me in there. It's just, as I said before, I asked the same seven questions to all three of our regulated utilities, just for consistency's sake and to kind of flush out a few details at least.
Okay, so we have two data requests that were received for NSP related to this. I'll make note of that and mention that. Brian, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Nothing for me.
Okay. And then refresh my memory a little bit on, we've asked for some information that will be coming, whether it's in a week or 2 weeks, the aging report, for example. That's not evidence until it's received, correct? It's more of a request at this point.
Yeah, it's probably a request that will, and then once we receive it, it will be docketed. So I guess at that point, it may become evidence as part of the record, so part of the record anyway.
Nothing to note at this point as I close out, or.
I mean, if you want to notice that it is something that's coming, that probably covers us.
Okay, so now I'm missing one. One was the aging report. Commissioner Crispin, I think you had asked for something.
Comparison of residential and non-residential bad debt. And then was there a request for more information about our financing during the...
I had asked, I think I had asked for an aging report similar to what MDU had provided. And that could also include the breakdown at the same time from residential, commercial. So why don't we just call it a comprehensive aging report?
And then I believe Commissioner Fedorchik was interested in North Dakota arrears totals.
That'd be a part of the aging report, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Just want to make sure that she was aware that we'll follow up with that.
Oh, okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Well, does anyone, staff, any other questions or comments?
Nope.
Commissioner Fedorchik, any other questions?
None for me, thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Crisman?
Victor, I'm now looking at your aging or your report and or your the data request. So sorry, I didn't get through that beforehand. I could have skipped some of my questions.
No problem. I should have sent him out earlier. I just didn't really think about it until we got in here. So that's my fault.
Okay. Commissioner Crisman?
No questions here, Mr. Chairman. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else from the company that you would like to add? Okay. I think I saw a no. Okay. Then the audio recording, as well as the two data requests received. And then just to note that we're waiting then for a comprehensive aging report. But aside from that, the other components will now be considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made? The company, any objections?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. Victor, any objections?
No objections.
Brian? Okay. Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Any other matters before us that anyone would like to cover? I don't see anything. So seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.